Krasner, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I was walking through a valley, bloody boots upon my feet, feeling beaten, feeling tired. I was falling to my knees when I came upon a clearing, stand someone been there before. As I walked into the open, up ahead of me I saw someone coming down the mountain, waving to me through the rain. We looked back and saw you come. He said, let me explain. There'll be fields of plenty, there'll be streams of gold, there'll be smiling, healthy children, I'm told, though I realize you must walk alone, I will walk this trail beside you to your home. We came home from the war, and like you we hadn't figured out what we were fighting for. Call it duty, call it honor, love of country or revenge, we have seen enough of killing, we just want some peace again.
It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. Our music this morning is George Mann performing his song, Streams of Gold. On today's edition, we start out with an interview from our archives that was originally aired in December of 2011. Melvin Merritt speaks with George Johnson about the Kansas City Veteran Court. And then, in the second half of the show, host Jessica Thomas talks with a representative of the Missouri chapter of the ACLU about their new Know Your Rights app for Android phones. Have your pens and paper ready for our calendar of events in the middle of the show and the 420 drug war news at the end of the show. Up next is Melvin and his guest.
Thank you for tuning in to this broadcast, but most of all, I would encourage the veterans to stay tuned. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. In the studio with me is Mr. George Johnson. He is here to talk about the Veterans Court. Welcome, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to be here.
My first question is, how long does the Vets Court last for an individual that's in this particular program?
Well, before we go into that, could I just give you a little brief history of the Veterans Treatment Court in
Sure.
Kansas City?
Go ahead.
Veterans Treatment Court is a municipal treatment court, and it began in August of 2009 under the guidance of Judge Arnie Bland. He is a presiding judge for the Veterans Treatment Court here in the Kansas City, Jackson County area. And it was modeled after Judge Russell, which is the Veterans Treatment Court judge out of Buffalo, New York. Mm-hmm. And he started his program in January 2008. Now, the Veterans Treatment Court is a court system that is designed for the veterans to go through who are successful within a 12-month period.
Okay. Maybe this would bring us up to the question that I first asked is, when was your first involvement with the Veterans Court?
I was involved in the planning process of the Veterans Treatment Court, and once again, it started in August of 2009, mm-hmm. and I was a part of that inception of the Veterans Treatment Court here in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay. How long does the vet court last for an individual that's involved in the program?
It's designed for a 12-month period, sir.
12 months?
Yes, sir.
Okay. How does an individual get into this program, and what causes the person to get into this program?
Yes, sir. This program, once again, is in conjunction with the Kansas City Municipal Court system under Judge Bland, as well as the Kansas City Veterans Medical Facility in Kansas City, Missouri. So it's a combination of the two coming together, partnership, should I say, to be able to help our assist our veterans. Mm-hmm. Primarily, the Veterans Treatment Court is for misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. It's not for violent offenses, and it's a treatment court that's designed to service and address the issues of substance abuse and mental health and other barriers with the law.
Well, that's great. Tell me a little bit, what's the pros and cons of this program?
Well, I would like to just keep it on the positive. I believe from what we've seen over the last 2 years that it's all pros. Mm-hmm. Once again, the person is successful in going through this treatment program. They're able to ask for an expungement of any offenses that are misdemeanors, and the court system works with the veteran to make sure that is eliminated from their records.
Okay. Now the cons, if there be any.
Well, you know, once again, the system is designed and it's great. However, it's up to the veteran to apply the tools that are there for him or she to be successful. However, if they're not successful, they will be put back into a traditional court system.
Okay. But in the meantime, while they're in this program, let's say, for instance, they have about 15 or 16 tickets and or other minor offenses. So what would happen to them if they did mess up in that? And I know you kind of
yes, sir.
Yeah, answer that a little bit.
Sure.
But, you know, what would take place after the person has been in this program, he goes back over into the main system, and he would have to, what, pick up from day one?
Well, if they go back to the main system, sir, the traditional mm-hmm. system outside of the Veterans Treatment Court mm-hmm. docket, mm-hmm. Once again, those are all still on pending for
okay.
that veteran, and he's got to go back through that traditional system. So that's the con on it, and that depends on the veteran. It's not mm-hmm. a negative for the system, because once again, if they are successful with the system, they can ask for an expungement, which will eliminate those 15 tickets
right.
if we're talking in that particular case.
Yeah. So if the individual has warrants, and they're in this program, will they still be threatened with these warrants?
No, sir. They work with a legal team, and they're able to downplay those as long as the veteran is successful in the program.
How often does a vet come to court?
So right now, the veterans are going to court once a week. It's on Wednesdays in the Kansas City Municipal Courthouse. On 1101 Locust, and Judge Bland, once again, is the presiding judge, and it's at 2:30. The docket starts at 2:30 p.m. on Wednesdays, every Wednesday.
And what happens if that individual missed court, say, for the first time?
If they miss the court for the first time without notifying anyone, of course, you know, the mentor gets involved, and we'll talk a little bit more about mentorship and how that's important to the program. But Kelly Winship, she's the veteran justice outreach coordinator, and mm-hmm. she would be in contact as well with the veteran to find out why is this veteran missing or missed that particular court session.
I see. One of the other questions that I wanted to ask is, if you would venture to say most of our crimes in America, does it relate to, say, a diagnosis of some other mental illnesses?
That's a strong possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're talking about Veterans Treatment Court, if I can jump back on that bandwagon,
okay.
Once again, a lot of these veterans are experiencing a post-traumatic stress disorder, which is commonly known as PTSD,
okay.
because of some type of traumatic experience. It's not just from combat, but serving in the military. And a lot of these veterans are self-medicating, abuse of substance abuse or whatnot, and end up homeless or jobless because of they're trying to deal with an issue, and they're trying to self-medicate to deal with the issue at hand. So the root issue may be something related to a combat experience, or just something, or some of the females who have actually been raped in the military by other military members, and that's reality.
I wanted to ask the question of what would, let's say, for instance, you mentioned, you alluded to the fact that the person has to have mentor. And tell us a little bit about mentoring.
Yes, sir. Mentorship is a volunteer program that's involved with the Veteran Treatment Court. And it is designed to for the mentor to come alongside that mentee, the veteran that's going through the actual Veterans Treatment Court, to assist them, to be a guide, to be a coach, to let them know that they're not alone. They're a go-between between the court system as well as the Kansas City VA Hospital. And Kelly Winship, once again, is the Veteran Justice Outreach Coordinator.
Yes, I see.
Yes, sir.
So could you tell us a little bit more if it, you know, in this program, give us a little bit more details, anything?
Yes, sir. I would just like to say that, once again, the court system has been up and running for 2 years now, a little bit over 2 years, August 2009, and Judge Blinn is doing a terrific job in making sure that no veteran left behind. That's our motto. We don't want to leave any veteran left behind, and I think it's so key because when you look at our population, look at less than 10% of our population have served in the military and whatever branch, as well as active duty right now, less than 1% of our population. I think we really got to take a hard look at who's defending this nation, as well as going out to serve in other nations to
Absolutely.
Help for the defense of freedom.
Absolutely. What some of the things that are going on in the courts, you know, when the individual go to court, they have other activities. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, sir. Once again, if you're talking about it's a treatment court. So if a person has an issue with alcoholism,
award systems. Is there set up in place for award systems?
Yes, sir. There are incentives. If a person is successful, we have a thing that we call the VIP seating.
When
they go to court, and it's like you section off to show that, hey, you know, this person is following all the mandates that are set before them, and everybody strives to be in a VIP seating, just like any other VIP that's involved. You know, whether you go to a ball game, you got the VIPs. So it's set aside to let the whole court system know, hey, these people are following the mandate.
So they're recognized for their achievement as they go.
Yes, sir. And we also have a grab bag. Say, for instance, you can have a grab bag. You may have pull out the number, and it may be to have lunch with Judge Bland one-on-one. So it's a very intimate time that we have there to let the veterans know that we're there for them, and we celebrate your accomplishment in achieving the milestones.
What are some of the other things that they won when they stick their hands in that little...
It's a variety of things. You have, once again, a lunch with Judge Bland. You may have a pop with the prosecutor, Kelly. She often has things that she would throw in the grab bag, like socks and shirts, candy bars or whatnot. So
it's a lot of incentive
as
the veteran go along in this particular program. So that's exciting, especially for the vets that they have something. So I encourage any of the vets that is unaware of some of these benefits that they have. Is there a way that we can get in touch with you?
Certainly, sir. We once again, Kelly Winship, she's the Veterans Justice Outreach Coordinator, and her number is area code 816-922-6155.
That's great. Can you say that number again?
Yes, sir. That's Kelly Winship at 816-922-6155.
Yeah. And I noticed, and I'm going to step out a little bit further, and I know that you and I talked about this particular thing when I went on your website, and they basically were showing ADHD, and I know you're not a doctor. So could you comment a little bit about what you know about this particular illness?
I am not too familiar with that.
Okay.
But I will say that one of the things that we experience that we talk about a lot is PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder. That's what a lot of our veterans are experiencing.
Okay.
I'm not very familiar with it, so I'm not going to really make too many comments on that one tonight.
Remember that you're in tune to KKFI 90.1, and you're listening to
Jaws of Justice.
And I'm going to turn it over. And so we're going to go right ahead and get into this, the rest of the questions that I have. You had some things like in front of you that want to share.
Yes, sir. I'm just going to give you some stats to show you how successful this program is.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, we have at this present day, we have 50 participants in the Veterans Treatment Court, and we always use acronyms in the military. So
right.
We call it VTC, Veterans Treatment Court, and that's the first initial for each word. And so far, we've graduated 34 veterans from this program,
mm-hmm.
and. Out of those 34 graduates, we've only had one to reoffend.
Mm.
So it's pretty successful. We've screened over 113 veterans for the Veterans Treatment Court. When a veteran first volunteers to go through this treatment court program, they initially have an assessment with Kelly Winship.
Mm.
She will make an assessment to see if this person, this veteran, is... this system is best for them, because not everybody is designed to, this system may not be designed for everyone.
Okay, what happens if the individual successfully come out of this program? Do they encourage them to do anything as it relates to the court system?
Well, what we would like, sir, and this is one of the things I was talking to earlier about the mentorship program,
mm-hmm.
Mentors are veterans as well. And they are volunteers. They don't get paid for this. So
mm-hmm.
they stand in court with the veterans. They in contact with the veterans on a weekly basis. They're encouraging veterans at their own expense. And this is about giving back to ensure that no veteran is left behind.
That's great.
We really encourage the veteran to get involved with a mentor, to be a mentor in the veteran court system, to be able to give back once they've completed the program and they're successful and everything. We want them to be able to give back, because some of their experiences can really help a veteran who is struggling.
What happens if the individual doesn't get in touch with the court anymore after they have graduated? Do any of the mentors follow up on them, say, 2 or 3 months out after they've graduated?
Well, once again, sir, this program is designed to get the veteran out there in society and being successful again in society. One of the things that we encourage is that the veterans got a sponsorship outside of this court system, because we're only limited. We're limited in the personnel that help with the court system, whether that's the judge, the prosecutors, the defense team, the mentors, and everybody. So technically, we're after they graduate, it's just like, you know, you graduate high school, you have completed that phase in your life, and it's time to move on to college. So you got to look for other avenues to be able to be successful.
From what I've heard, Judge Bland has a big heart in terms of trying to help the veterans that have fell through the cracks.
That is correct, sir. Once again, he's a visionary for this program, along with, I got to give credit to Dr. D'Souza. She was a visionary as well, and they came in partnership. They said, we got to do something to help our veterans. And a lot of our veterans that are in this system, they were coming from being homeless.
Hmm.
And it's a shame that we, you know, fight for this country, and then you got to come back and be homeless here in America. So they realized that, and there are systems in place that are designed to get the veteran off the streets.
I think they have a much greater understanding about the veterans opposed to when I came out of the service from Vietnam.
Yes, sir.
And they didn't have that much compassion, even though it was there, but not as much as what we see going on now.
Yes, sir. Our nation has really flip the script on that in a positive way. I was talking to a gentleman earlier who was introducing us, and he was telling me he's a Korean War veteran.
Okay.
And he was telling me about how it's different now than it was then, and how there are more things in place for the veteran to be able to be successful once they come out of the military service.
Yeah, I do see that a lot of programs are set up to assist the veterans.
Yes,
and
sir.
So that's great that we're recognizing our veterans. And there needs to be more, though, especially as it relates to some of these mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about what people are visioning to assist the veterans. So I believe that something great is going to come out of that. And recognizing the mental illness, recognizing the suicides. So you want to come in on, especially veterans coming out of the service.
Yes, sir. My son is he's a lieutenant in Afghanistan right now, and he'll be returning after being there for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
This Saturday, actually. He'll be home for his 25th birthday.
All right. Congratulations to him.
But he's going back to Germany, which is his home station. And just a couple months ago, a friend of his is a captain, was a captain, and he committed suicide in Afghanistan. So didn't leave a note or anything, so we don't know why. We don't know what he saw and what he experienced over there. And so suicide is very high in the military, and veterans who are coming out, that suicidal ideation is there for whatever reason. I just want to say it's a real issue, and we deal with it with the veterans going through Veterans Court. I personally have dealt with a veteran who was suicidal, and we have systems in place to help that veteran get past that.
Speaking of suicide, one of my favorite meteorologists, Don Herman, committed suicide, and I thought it was a shocker when I heard it. So I'm sure he was dealing with depression. What are your thoughts about that?
I'm not sure. I haven't really followed it, but I'm sure that there was some type of mental illness, some type of challenge that was there, and once again, it leads up to that.
Yeah, my prayers go out to Don Herman's family. Remember that you're listening to the edition of Jaws of Justice, KKFI 90.1.
Yeah, I'd just like to add my appreciation to Brother Johnson for being here tonight. And, of course, I think that Brother Melvin did a tremendous job. I work with veterans groups. I work with the Veterans for Peace, Iraq Veterans Against the War. And there are a number of organizations that I work with where we try to impress the importance, the problems that many of our veterans come back from defending the country that are suffering. So I think that this is a tremendous program, and it's very needed, because we know what a record, no matter what a criminal record or can do to somebody, is when it comes to seriously affecting their employment opportunities, especially with the crisis that's going on with the millions of our brothers and sisters that are unemployed. And I would just like to, on behalf of the team, I would like to extend an invitation for you to take a more active role with the Jaws of Justice program. You're welcome to come in anytime and perhaps join us to help us make a better program and help us address some of these major issues. I just wanted to add that. So thanks to you and Brother Melvin for pulling this program together. I just wanted to add those comments.
Yes, sir. I just want to say thank you for having me on the broadcast here, to be able to reach out to our veterans. Knowledge is everything. You know, if you don't know about it, you're not able to act upon it. And I want to say once again to our visionary, Judge Bland, and as well as Dr. D'Souza, who initiated this system in place to be able to reach out to our veterans, and Dr. Melvin, Brother Melvin. I would just want to say thank you, sir, for inviting me out to be able to give a little input.
That's exactly what I was getting ready to say. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for coming out, being my guest here at Jaws of Justice, and we were listening to Penny Mills broadcast. So thank you very much. And as he said, that I hope to see you again at KKFI 90.1.
Thank you.
And now the calendar for November 17th, 2014.
Missouri State Representative Brandon Ellington is holding his third annual local celebrity charity basketball game to feed the homeless Wednesday, November 19th at the De La Salle Education Center, 3737 Troost Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. Pre-game activities are from 5 to 6 p.m. and the game is from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Admission is for canned goods, a turkey, or lightly used coats, hats, gloves, or children's toys. The donations gathered at the game will be shared with those in need at the Voices of the People's 8th Annual Community Thanksgiving Dinner to be held at Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Emmanuel Cleaver Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri, on Wednesday, November 26th, with dinner served from 4 to 6 p.m. Senator Claire McCaskill urges veterans all across Missouri to make their voices heard by participating in her Secret Shopper program. This program allows them to share timely confidential feedback about their VA healthcare visits. It also helps strengthen oversight and accountability for VA healthcare facilities. If you or a veteran you know would like to participate in the Veterans Customer Satisfaction Program, visit the Senator's website. That is mccaskill.senate.gov/VCSP. Then complete the confidential survey. Responses can be submitted after each healthcare visit. The first statewide Missouri Recovery Support Conference, December 8th and 9th, will be held at the University of Central Missouri, Elliott Union, Warrensburg, Missouri. This two-day conference is being sponsored by the Department of Mental Health, Division of Behavioral Health, and an alliance of grassroots, faith-based, and community-based organizations that are providing recovery support in Missouri. For more information, contact Missouri Recovery Network at www.morecovery.org or call at 573-634-1029. My name is Keith Brown Eel, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org.
And you are tuned to the Jaws of Justice Radio here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Jessica Thomas. With me in the studio is Sarah Rossi, and Sarah is the Director of Advocacy and Policy for the ACLU in Missouri. In Kansas City specifically?
I'm based in Kansas City, yes.
Cool.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. There was, you know, a couple of issues that we wanted to address, but I know that the ACLU is pretty active right now. This is, of all the times in history, again, you know, how cycles repeat themselves, and we kind of find ourselves kind of back in a, comparatively to me, in the 50s. You know, we've kind of stepped back that far, I think, in social justice and personal liberties with where we're going. And, you know, between police violence against civilians, as well as, you know, I mean, what's going on right now? We're looking at, you know, this decision coming down with the, this decision coming down in, and I'm like, Ferguson.
Right.
God. Good morning. Yeah, this decision that's coming down in Ferguson, and, you know, what may or may not happen, if people anticipating, violence, and in many cities, these things going on. But the ACLU's developed an app.
We have. We developed an app called the Mobile Justice App. It's available on the Google Play Store, and you can download it from our website. But and I want to be clear that there has been a lot going on in Ferguson, and there have been a lot of protests and a lot of police response. And, you know, we've had a couple cases that we've taken to court over how protesters are treated by law enforcement and things like that. But this app was actually in development over a year ago. So we wanted it we started developing it before – Michael Brown was killed and before the community reaction to that. So it's been in the works for a while. We were set to launch in mid-November, so we ended up hitting our deadline. But yeah, it's a great app, and it should help people record their interactions with police, and that'll go right to the ACLU of Missouri, and we can review it and see if there's been a civil liberties violation.
Well, for one, though, it's just for Android apps, so that we're us iPhone users are kind of not able to use that right now.
Right. So it's available for Android phones, and then we'll have an iPhone version is going to be available probably late December, early January. It just takes a little longer to get approval from Apple than it does for Android phones.
So how this app works, someone's saying, you know, as long as you're recording it and you've got it going, if the police try to knock the phone out of your hand or throw your phone or whatever, then that data is sent.
Right. So the way the app works is there are a few main functions. The one you're talking about, the record function. So if you are, a lot of people will sometimes, so if you get pulled over, they'll turn the app on and set it on the dashboard, you know.
Right.
So if you do that, or if you, are recording somebody else's interaction with police, and the police ask you if you're recording, you say, yes, you do have the right to record. Mm-hmm. But if, for example, if they try to take your phone away or try to confiscate your phone and delete it, if there are two ways to stop the recording, and one is to hit stop recording, and that'll submit it to the ACLU of Missouri. The other one is just to shake your phone. So if you know that there's a chance that phone's going to be taken from you, or that information's going to they're going to attempt to delete that, you just shake your phone, and it sends it to the ACLU of Missouri, so you don't have to worry about it being deleted.
Right. And of course, now there was a decision that came down not all that long ago that says that they do have to have a warrant to search your phone.
And this, the nice thing about this app, though, is that that won't even be an issue. So
right.
It doesn't matter if the phone is searched or not, because that information will be automatically sent to the ACLU, and you won't have to worry about that.
So where's that sent to then? Does that go to, do you have a department of?
We do. So we have an account set up where all of the information comes to us. Only people, working for the ACLU or who have signed confidentiality agreements are allowed to look at the footage and review it and see if there have been any civil liberties violations. So we have a separate account that's only accessible to people in our office and volunteers and interns who have signed confidentiality agreements, just to make sure that it stays private, doesn't get dispersed to anybody else, things like that. But it does come directly to us. It doesn't go to anybody else.
You know, it seems like we were discussing that it seems like over the past couple of years, I mean, where the police have gotten a lot more aggressive, more hands-on with a regular mom-and-pop citizen. People who are like, and myself included, that, I mean, it doesn't matter at what your life experience is. I don't think anyone is prepared for the fear that's struck in you when police descend upon you. The sheer aggressiveness and, what seems like, well, their desire to be not friendly. Let's put it that way. Maybe they aren't coming at you with, you know, an intent of doing you harm, but it seems like now more in the last few years, like there's more an aggressive tone coming from police departments. And I kind of looked, I was doing some research on my own. It's like, what happened? What changed to change that tone where we've gone from protect and serve to it just straight enforcing the law, not just enforcing the law, but I guess kind of a way trying to show the citizen that you're not in charge and we're not in charge of your happiness or safety. We're now here just to enforce laws. In my looking, I saw something. It was a Supreme Court decision that was put down in 2010, I do believe, which said the police no longer are, required to protect and serve, but just to enforce laws. So really, if you were looking for a date as to when this really started to happen, it was sometime in 2010. But what, do you have any idea at all what instigated that? What brought that down as to where the police stopped being, you know, a force like officer friendly and, someone that was trusted to someone who's feared?
I don't know if, I think there's been a progression in, law enforcement becoming less friendly. I think that, you know, we don't think that all cops are bad cops. This, and the launch of the mobile justice app wasn't, it's not really an anti-police app. It's more of a pro-civil liberties app, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that most police officers, do care about the people they're serving, do care about the people they're protecting. They're not all bad, but there are bad actors. And I think that it might not so much be a progression of police officers caring less. I think it might be an increase in people reporting bad apples. And so maybe it seems like more is covered by the media more. Hmm. Obviously, when there are mass protests, like we saw in Ferguson, and police act badly during those protests and violate civil liberties, that gets a lot of coverage. And I think it encourages other people to come forward and talk about it. So I don't know if it's necessarily that police officers and law enforcement agents have gotten less caring. I think it's that people feel more encouraged to report the bad apples in the group.
And I think, you know, perhaps with some of this that's going on now with civil liberties being, like with in this case of Michael Brown, and what's happening with our civil liberties being violated, and of course the police saying, you know, they felt intimidated, and he was not a little kid. He was not a small child or a small youth. He's just intimidating on the size of his presence. But if you judge everyone by, oh, you're big, so I feel threatened, and which could probably nothing is further than the truth, you know, that, big doesn't always equal threatening. But what, was there a specific incident that caused, do you think, the ACLU to create this app? Was this something, I know that you were, you know, like you say, you've been in development with this for over a year. I mean, long before this incident had happened. Was there a specific incident that started that happening, or is that just kind of like along the line of Cop Block? Have you heard familiar with Cop Block?
No, I'm not familiar with Cop Block.
Well, Cop Block is, you know, basically is filming the police.
Mm-hmm.
And along the same lines, and then the information, they'll send information to a central site, or the information is shared so that it's not, you know, hidden or destroyed.
So this app, we decided to develop this app after the New York Civil Liberties Union and the American Civil Liberties Union of New Jersey both launched something called the Stop and Frisk app, and that was meant to curb
the New York City.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. New York City stop and frisk policies and make sure that people's liberties were being protected and not violated by police. So that was the first kind of version of this app. And the ACLU of Missouri, in conjunction with about seven other affiliates, a few of whom launched with us a couple weeks ago, got together and said, you know, we need this in our area as well. I mean, it's the statistics compiled by the state of Missouri alone show discrepancy in who's stopped by police and who's not.
It's a real issue.
It is a real issue. Racial mm-hmm. profiling is a real thing. It does happen. And those statistics, the fact that the app had been so successful in New York City and New Jersey, we just decided it was time for the ACLU of Missouri to put something together for people to have access to that kind of technology to protect their rights.
Right. So this is just recently launched. So it really hasn't had an opportunity to really get out there and do its work.
Yeah, we launched it on the 6th of November. So it's been out mm-hmm. for a couple of weeks. We've already gotten hundreds of downloads. We're getting footage from people testing it to make sure it works. We've had a couple of submissions already of police stops, none of which had anything worrisome in them, but people know what it's for. People are starting to use it, and we're getting more downloads every day. We're really excited.
It is. So something with that, you don't really anticipate what it's going to do. I mean, it's like, I know that you had an outcome, mm-hmm. a goal for it.
Right.
Right. And sometimes, you know, other outcomes are achieved by, you know, just by the fact that that's out there launched now.
Right. And that's what, so when the New York City Civil Liberties Union launched their Stop and Frisk app, I think they launched in 2000, I was either 10 or 12. I think it might have been 12. And it's been downloaded over 30,000 times since they launched it, and I'm sure in combination with other factors, since they launched that app, the stop and frisk rate in Brooklyn or New York City has gone down over 50%. So it does have a positive effect, and I think it's, you know, helpful to empower citizens to make sure that they're not being aggressively bothered by police, and I think it's good for police to know that somebody's watching.
That also, the stop and frisk thing. I know that it's been an issue here as well. And it's also been challenged. Just walking down the street with a backpack does not justify or, you know, make it okay to be stopped. And because you're walking down the street, just being somebody walking down the street with a backpack on, that's not acceptable. That's not a reason to be
that's
pulled
right.
over. So,
right.
I mean, and walking while walking, pedestrian. Is there like a you know, something, say that does happen to you, that you're stopped over on the side of the road, just you're walking down the street, minding your own business, you have a backpack on, and the next thing you hear are sirens and they're pulling you over, questioning you. What gives them the right, and at what point, what would say someone say to a police officer to avoid? I mean, besides breaking out your app, for one, and recording, so because like now, because that's just not right. You've been stopped walking, being a pedestrian with a backpack on. And, what would you say to a police officer to, you know, as far as justifying that stop and frisk thing?
There's the nice thing about, so first of all, with the Mobile Justice app, I do just want to mention that, there's a Know Your Rights tab on that app. So even if you don't think you're going to use the app all that much, I recommend downloading it just so you have those rights right there in your hand so you can read them. But there's Know Your Rights information on the app, and it links to an even bigger variety of Know Your Rights information on the ACLU website. But, you know, the first thing we always say when people are interacting with police is to make sure you're cooperating. And you can say that, you know, I know I have this right. I know I have this right. But the most important thing is that you cooperate with the police so they don't have any reason, to be aggressive or, you know. So when you do actually come to us or go to somebody and say, I think my rights were violated, we can make sure we say, good. Did you cooperate? Did you tell them you knew your rights? Did you ask them these questions? That's always really useful. So cooperating is always the first thing we say. Past that, every situation is different. I think sometimes we know why a police officer is stopping us because they say so. Sometimes we don't, because they don't have a reason, and they don't have a reason to tell you, so they're just stopping you because of their own personal suspicion. But again, we always say cooperate first and know your rights. And like I said, those are all those are all available on the app and on our website.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for them to justify what they're doing. So how do you think that having this app will, affect asset forfeiture?
I'm not sure about that. That might be another episode. But can you be a little more specific?
Right. No, I've just been in the use of the app, other creative uses for the app. Saying, yeah, I mean, you're recording that, and you're justified in using the app, of course, and you know, I don't know. I guess I was just asked that question. What did you think that it would assist you in the asset forfeiture arena? And I probably see that it probably would be helpful in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, and I should say too that the app isn't just to protect protesters in Ferguson. I mean, the reason we launched it statewide is to make sure that people had it available for any situation in which they felt their civil liberties were being violated. We launched it as a mobile justice app. You know, will be a really good tool for protesters. It'll be a good tool for drivers. It'll be a good tool for pedestrians. But we want people to use it whenever they feel like a violation of their constitutional rights is taking place.
So you say you feel like your constitutional rights are being violated. And just for instance, say I'm walking to wherever, I've got a backpack on and I hear the lights go on. And of course I, you know, stop and say, you know, what am I being pulled over for or stopped or questioned for? Because we have a right, a basic inalienable right, to proceed unmolested, go about our business without being harassed or questioned to ask where we're going or what we're doing. So how would you address that? Just say, when that is happening to you, you know you shouldn't be being stopped. So what would you say?
I would just say that...
You want to cooperate to an extent, but I don't want to cooperate. There's no reason for them to stop me. This shouldn't be happening. I'm walking down the street. What is your justification for pulling me over?
Right, and I think
that...
I have
a backpack on?
I think that you can ask them that. I think you can ask why you're being stopped. You can refuse a search. You can refuse to answer questions, even. You have the right to remain silent. When I say cooperate, I just mean, you know, if the officer asks you to stop, stop. If he asks you for identification, you can ask why you want to see your identification. You can ask for justification. But there comes a point where you're going to just be opposing each other and one of you is going to have to give up or, you know, something is going to happen, which is why we say cooperate. So you can exercise your rights, tell the officer you know your rights. But for safety reasons, we always tell people to try to cooperate with police officers.
Right. They definitely don't want to argue with them because you end up with your face down on the ground and teeth. Not goodness, not happiness, which kind of leads us to what's happening with this Michael Brown thing, and it's got everybody's panties in a bunch right now that, honestly, everybody's really, you know, agitated and waiting to see what's going to happen. I wonder if, you know, some of the anticipation of, you know, what potentially could happen with rioters, and they're, you know, saying that these protesters that are coming into town are actually the people that are stirring up, you know, these things, or the riots. And it's not the people of Ferguson themselves at all. It's outside agitators coming in. Outside agitators. Where have you heard that before?
I think that is a combination of things. I think it definitely is residents of Ferguson who are banding together to, you know, protest against an injustice that they perceive. But I also think people outside groups who are supportive are coming in to help with that cause, and I think there are probably people coming in who are not supportive, who are coming to help with whatever cause they've decided to trumpet. But it definitely is people from Ferguson. It's people from the St. Louis area. And the important thing to remember is this isn't just a Mike Brown issue for people anymore. It's a officer use of force against young black men issue across the country,
right.
And it's sparked something in people. So you know, whether or not Officer Wilson is indicted, I'm assuming there will be a reaction. I think that, there are a lot of different opinions on what happened, and there are a lot of people who don't think Darren Wilson should be indicted, and there are a lot of people who do think Darren Wilson should be indicted, and I think no matter what happens, there's going to be a reaction, and the ACLU is prepared for that. We're excited that the app is out. You know, our main offices in St. Louis will all be there, you know, helping people and making sure that they know their rights, you know, assisting in any way we can if there are legal issues that happen because of the response to the indictment announcement.
Right. So the ACLU literally have boots on the ground during these events.
We do. So we have a very strong legal department who's been handling a lot of the civil rights litigation that's come out of Ferguson. And we also have a really strong, advocacy and policy department. And we, you know, make sure that we're handing out Know Your Rights pamphlets. We have a, staff member in St. Louis, Mustafa, who was, on the ground with protesters handing out Know Your Rights. He was actually a victim of the five second rule that one of our lawsuits came out of when the police told him he wasn't allowed to stand on the sidewalk for more than 5 seconds.
Oh, okay.
And made him move. So that was one of the things that the ACLU, took to court. But yeah, Mustafa was there. A lot of other staff members were there. Some of our staff attorneys. But yeah, they were there helping, and we'll be there again.
And this is all coming up, you know, pretty fast. I think the decision comes down today, doesn't it?
I'm not sure. There's been a lot of speculation about when that decision will come out, but I don't have any idea, and I don't know if anybody else actually does either.
No. And you kind of have to figure they're going to have to support their own at this point and not indict this officer because that would be saying, oh, well, we don't support you at all. But then, of course, it also says that we support a criminal behavior by officers in one way, excessive force and violence. Just, you know, taking the gunplay out of it entirely would be one way to do it, but, you know, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be up to the grand jury. I'm not in the room. None of us are in the room. We don't know what's being presented or, you know, what people are thinking, but, yeah, we'll be ready when the decision comes one way or the other.
So when this app was designed, now who funded this? Was this something that was funded for? Was this by contributors to the ACLU that this is funded? Or
a lot of the ACLU generally comes from donations and contributors, and I encourage people to become a member of the ACLU. You know, get on our mailing list, make sure you know what's going on, make sure you know what we've got coming down the pike. And you can do that on our website, but the funding was a joint project between National ACLU and then ACLU of Missouri and the other affiliates that worked on the app. So we all split the costs and chipped in on it together.
Mm-hmm. And this was released on a national level.
It was not
locally.
Just locally. So each affiliate that chipped in for the project has their own app. So there's the ACLU of Missouri's Mobile Justice, ACLU of Oregon Mobile Justice, things like that. So it's nice because it creates a barrier around your constituency area. So we have a barrier around Missouri, so we only get information from inside Missouri.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. ACLU of Oregon gets information out of Oregon, things like that. So it's definitely localized, but National ACLU helped us move it forward.
Mm-hmm. And how are you guys out promoting the app? I mean, obviously, you know, press releases.
Right.
And coming out and talking about it. But are you guys out in, say, schools and things, you know, where they have an officer-friendly or a DARE program? It seems like it might make really good sense for the ACLU to be in schools.
Yeah, there are definitely civil liberties issues that can be addressed in schools. We do have plans to kind of push the app out more. We're going to try to do some, include it in any speaking engagements we have. We've still been going around the St. Louis area, promoting it, doing different Know Your Rights trainings and things like that. And I think it'll be a bigger statewide educational program in the coming months. But yeah, we're hammering that out, but we'll be in a town near you soon.
Yeah, I was looking to see if I could pull it up, but I'm like, well, I have an iPhone, so that really doesn't behoove me to even try to talk you through it on the air.
I mean, I have it memorized at this point. I had to look at it so much during the development, but so when you open the app, you know, you'll see the ACLU logo, you'll see, a few buttons, and there are four main functions. The first one is the record function, and that's the one you tap, you hit that when you start interacting with a police officer, when you see somebody else interacting with one. It records sound and video, and then if you either stop recording or shake it, it'll send that video to the ACLU, and then it'll ask you to fill out a short incident report. And that's the second function. And that allows you to record your demographics, the officer's name, badge number, where the incident happened, what kind of language the officer used, what kind of if there was any physical threats or things like that. And that brief survey then accompanies your video, so we know more about the incident. The next function is the witness function, which is also really great. So if you have the witness function on your phone and there are, say, five or six other people within a mile of you that also have the witness function turned on their phone, if you both have that turned on, you'll be alerted to when somebody within a mile of you is being stopped by police and wants you to come record it, which is great. So it turns into this kind of community policing or community support app for people. If they get an alert, you can walk six blocks over and see where the person is that's being pulled over or stopped and record that incident. So you'll know when somebody needs you to come make sure that the police interaction is appropriate.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Batman light.
Yeah.
A little bit,
just on your little cell phone.
Yeah, that's really great, actually. Yeah. And it does. It does encourage a lot of interaction. It's kind of a call for help.
Yeah, it is a little bit. Just come make sure everything's okay over here.
Right. If the tree falls in the woods thing and there's no one to hear it.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if you're arrested or your civil liberties are violated, if no one's there to see it, doesn't
right.
happen.
It actually happens. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it is. You know, Sarah, I'd like to thank you for coming in today and speaking with us about the app. I think it's really important that we're stepping forward using this technology in order to, like you say, to unionize, for lack of better terms, and, you know, for each one of us to strengthen ourselves in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really, but I'd like to thank you, Sarah, for
thanks for having me. It's great
speaking with us this morning about the ACLU app. Well, what is the name of the app? It's just like, does it have an app name?
It's called ACLU of Missouri Mobile Justice.
Right. So Mobile Justice is the name of the app. Sarah Rossi, I've been speaking with today from the American Civil Liberties Union. She's the director of advocacy and policy here in Missouri.
Thanks
in Kansas
for having me.
City specifically.
Yeah, based in Kansas City, but statewide.
Awesome. Thank you very much for joining us today here on the Jaws of Justice.
Thank you.
All right.
It's the 420 Drug War News. This is our last bit of coverage from last week's Drug Policy Alliance teleconference featuring newspapers and broadcasters from around the country in regards to the recent elections and the changes to drug laws.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Susanna Caldwell from Alaska Dispatch News. It seems like conservatives really kind of carried the day at the end here, at least in Alaska for sure. I mean, do you have any sense right now on, you know, why so many conservatives appear to be in favor of marijuana legalization?
To answer, Ethan Nadelman, director of the Drug Policy Alliance.
Well, I mean, you know, let's be clear. I mean, obviously, support among conservatives is not nearly as strong as it is among liberals or even among moderates. But I think what you find is the following. First of all, although most elected officials who support marijuana defense reform come from the Democratic side, the small number of Republicans who do so oftentimes do it with a level of commitment and passion that we don't oftentimes see from the Democratic elected officials. And I'm thinking especially of Gary Johnson, the former governor of New Mexico, and Rand Paul and his father, as well as a few other of the Tea Party members on Capitol Hill now who are stepping up, you know, both old-timers like Dana Rohrabacher as well as some new folks like Amish and others. So that's one piece. I think, secondly, the fiscal savings piece of this, the fact that one can cut government expenses and at the same time earn tax revenue from a quote-unquote sin tax, that obviously has appeal, and we've seen that show up in some of our research. Thirdly, there is that libertarian streak among conservatives where they just feel that this is none of the government's business. And even among those who are less driven by libertarian ideals, the notion that this should be decided by the states. I mean, I've oftentimes been struck by the folks on Capitol Hill, including fairly traditional Republicans, who will say, leave this issue to the states. So for all those reasons, I think it's been really important. I mean, Grover Norquist had turned out to be quite a substantial friend of marijuana reform and sentencing reform, and there are any range of others who have done so. I do think we've also seen that as support has jumped nationally for legalizing marijuana, it's jumped fairly consistently from liberals to conservatives. So liberals have gone from, let's say, 60-70%, conservatives have gone from 30-40%. So it is rising across the country.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this week's series of 420 Drug War News reports taken from the recent teleconference put together by the Drug Policy Alliance. Their website is drugpolicy.org. Please check them out. The DEA is the joker. The FDA is the joke. The joke is on the USA, so why not take a poke? Folks, the iron is hot. Please do your part. Dean Becker, drugtruth.net.
Ready? One, two, three. Here in my problem, what am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it some way, somehow?
We hope you enjoy today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Mid-Coast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Jessica Thomas, host of Before the Dawn on Sunday morning from 4 to 7 a.m. Our outro music is Better Man from the Plan for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beauticious Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and Eco Radio, KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta musical.
Smile on my face. Lord, I'm gonna teach myself. if I